Hey, y'all, Scott here, hawking stickers for the back of your truck. They've got some great ones at LibertyStickers.com. Get your son killed, Jeb Bush, 2016, FDR, no longer the worst president in American history, the National Security Agency, blackmailing your congressman since 1952, and USA. Sometimes we back Al-Qaeda, sometimes we don't. And there's over 1,000 other great ones on the wars, police state, elections, the Federal Reserve, and more at LibertyStickers.com. They'll take care of all your custom printing for your band or your business at TheBumperSticker.com. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else is stickers suck. Hey, it's my show. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. Our next guest is Dan McAdams. He used to be Ron Paul's foreign policy guy in his congressional office, and now he's Ron Paul's foreign policy guy as director of the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity, and now he's a Texan. Welcome to Texas, and welcome to the show, Dan. How the hell are you? Oh, did I say it? It's Daniel McAdams, everybody. Welcome to the show. Oh, I hit the wrong button. Now welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Scott. It's great to be with you again. It's great to be in the same state as you as well.
Yeah. Come up to Austin. We'll get some barbecue.
Will do. Yeah. Can't wait.
All right. And, I should ask you to help me get Ron on the show sometime soon. It's been a little while since we've spoken, and I've got a couple of things I'd like to ask his opinion about.
Okay. Well, we're almost neighbors now, so.
Holler at him out the screen door there. All right, good times. What the hell is going on in Ukraine? Catch us up on the news. No, in fact, put off the news for a minute. Let's talk about the history a little bit, because I know part of the news is the EU trade deal thing, and you can't really tell us that without having to backtrack anyway. So why don't you start with the backtrack and explain about the trade deal and what role that had in the whole regime change operation and how we got to June 2014 in the Ukraine crisis. And then we can catch up on the current violence, the talks, the role of the Russians, and everything else.
Okay, sure. Well, as you know, late last year, when the then-president Yanukovych was pondering whether he should sign this deal with the EU, which would have given them associate membership in the EU or an association agreement with the EU. It had exclusivity on it, and it would have, according to his analysis, would have prohibited or at least interfered with trade with Russia, which certainly Eastern Ukraine has a lot of trade with Russia, and it's a very important trading partner next door. Also, the Russians, upped the ante and said, "Hey, look, we'll give you $15 billion if you stick with us and don't sign this exclusive agreement with the EU." So he balked at the last minute, and I think there was a lot of big players on the West side, the U.S. being the biggest, but also the EU, also minor EU players like Poland felt themselves to be very important. And they made numerous trips to Kiev and ginned up this whole protest in the street, which, as we know, became very violent. A last-minute deal was brokered on, I think it was the night of the 21st of February, whereby they would have early elections in exchange for, calming the whole thing down. But somewhere in the middle of the night, the coup took place, probably because the deal was crafted by the EU and Ukraine. It was probably the U.S. and our good friend Victoria Nuland who came in and wanted to put her guy Yats in power. So there was a coup that night overnight. Yanukovych fled the country. An interim president named himself. And there were elections wherein a good part of the country could not vote. Here a few weeks ago, I think May 20th, elected a new president, Poroshenko, the chocolate king. One of the oligarchs, which is kind of funny because the whole thing, the protesters said this was a protest against corruption in government, corruption in politics, get rid of the oligarchs, and here you have one of the biggest oligarchs who's now in charge of the country. The East did not go along with the regime change in Kiev. They've been historically closer to Russia, and in fact, up until not that awfully long ago, were actually part of Russia. So they were not too keen on what happened in Kiev and in the West. So they decided to try to break away. And Kiev, with U.S. support and EU support, has been particularly brutal in putting down this attempt to dissociate themselves with the regime in Kiev.
All right. And now, on the night of the coup, I wanted to point out this article and Boy, I guess I could have Googled it or something real quick. I should have. I believe it was in Der Spiegel in Germany that talked about the billionaires and the oligarchs and their role in the coup. And it was quite simply that the Americans and the Europeans had told them, you better forsake this guy or we're just going to steal every last dime that you have outside of the country. And
yeah,
so those were the guys in the Party of Regions, the party of the president. And so that was when they withdrew the last of their support. So at the same time, I mean, I'm just adding what you're saying, emphasizing the point here, that the same time that they were making a deal for to call for new elections, which, you know, were to take place in December, et cetera, like that, the rest of the compromise, while they were making that deal, they were actually telling his party members, we are going to destroy all of you. We're going to take everything from you if you don't get rid of this guy right now. And that was what caused him to finally, well, that and the Nazis occupying the palace and or whatever mansions and government buildings, giving him basically nowhere to rest his head for the night. He went ahead and took off for the east, right?
Yeah, and also, you know, some of the Party of Regions members who were not oligarchs were simply prevented from voting against the so-called impeachment of Yanukovych. So there was,
well,
a lot.
Well, they didn't
of,
even get their numbers on the impeachment anyway, right? They just claimed it anyway.
No, they didn't. They didn't. And but that was okay because the right guy won. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, there's corruption and there's these guys. I'm sure I have no doubt that they were ready to make a deal with whoever. You know, they wanted to keep all of their ill-gotten riches on both sides, on all sides, which is really the tragedy of post-USSR Ukraine. It's it's a country potentially very wealthy that has been absolutely destroyed by corruption, by oligarchs, by ill-meaning people, and by, frankly, people in the West who see it as a potential area to enrich themselves as well. Look, you know, this whole controversy over the vice president's son ending up on the board of one of the biggest oil companies there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is how it works. This is the transnational elite carving up countries, you know. And so this is a potentially, as who was it, Brzezinski, who said Ukraine is the prize. And so there you have it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, J.P. Sotili, the News Vandal, had a great write up all about. I'll go ahead and name names, but I might be wrong. But I'm pretty sure it was Archer Daniels Midland and Monsanto and some of the other just household agribusiness firms who have major interests there as well now. And what all role with the oil companies they played in sponsoring some of the same groups and all that kind of thing, all that cronyism. But now, so let me ask you this about the IMF loans, and we're going to get to the recent stuff, but we got a whole other segment too. But when it comes to the IMF thing, the standard economic hitman thing is you get them in so much debt, you just break them, you liquidate all their assets, you give it to the connected cronies, get to keep it and put it in their Swiss bank account and whatever, and then, you know, let the people starve or who cares what happens to them. You just move on to the next one, you know, like vampires sucking the blood out of nations. Only it seems like if they want to really kind of colonize, they meaning the West, America and the European satellites, they want to really colonize this place and integrate it into NATO and into the EU and all this kind of thing. And their economy is already $1 zillion in debt and completely broken and hardly works at all. Whatever wealth they do produce gets sucked right out of the country by aforementioned oil companies and agribusiness firms, right? And so what's the point of taking on something? I think this is got to be part of what's keeping Putin out. I mean, Odessa is a pearl, but Putin doesn't want it because the whole damn country is a complete wreck and basket case. It's nothing but a pile of liabilities. So help me understand, I mean, assuming that they have any idea what they're doing, what the hell these people think they're doing in trying to take over the country, but at the same time trying to put it under one of these IMF regimes that's just going to take it from broken all the way to hell. And now the damn music.
There's the music.
See, I need to figure out how to ask a question on the radio without going on for a minute and a half. But after 15 years, I haven't figured it out yet. So place your bets on me continuing to ask questions all the way up until the break and then stalling as the music plays and let you know. We'll be right back with Dan McAdams from the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity right after this. Hey, all, Scott Horton here for the BumperSticker.com. I created it, but quickly sold to Rick so I could do this instead. In the decades since, he's made one hell of a great company. The BumperSticker.com makes digitally printed, photo-quality, full-color bumper stickers for your band or your business, as well as magnets, adhesive vinyl decals, and labels for products and industrial use, and your political cause or campaign, too. The BumperSticker.com also offers full custom graphic design for bringing your idea to reality. Let the BumperSticker.com help you get the word out. That's the BumperSticker.com at the BumperSticker.com. And tell them you heard it here. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show. Oh, all the news I didn't get to today. Well, that's what tomorrow's for. Right now, we're talking with Dan McAdams about the situation in Ukraine, the American coup d'etat there in February and the aftermath. And I was asking some kind of question there about why the hell would they want to, first of all, take on basket case Ukraine, and then at the same time, they're saddling it with IMF internal economic destruction at the same damn time. Dan, can you make sense of that for me?
Well, I think, you know, if you're going to go conspiratorial, it makes sense to demoralize the population with IMF austerity. I think you've already seen the beginning of significant ethnic cleansing of eastern Ukraine. And this is where the industrial sector is built up the most. So I think, there was a UN report that came out this past week saying that over 100,000 refugees from eastern Ukraine have poured into Russia. And it's interesting that the U.S. has not said a single word about it. You know, this is not RT or Putin or anything else. This is the UN saying over 100,000 people have streamed into Russia, getting away from the fighting, getting away from the shelling that the Ukrainian army is doing on civilian populations, and the U.S. is completely silent. So on one hand, if you have the populations terrorized by Kiev, then all of a sudden you see their gas, electricity bills going up 50 to 70% and their pensions cut in half, these people are going to leave, and they're going to leave the East with all its riches to be exploited. So, maybe it's a conspiracy theory, but if you look at what's happening, it seems to be happening exactly that way.
Yeah, no, I mean, I wouldn't call that a conspiracy theory. I asked you to speculate, so conspiracy theory is when you abandon the rules of argument and go with your faith instead, to me, which is quite a bit different. Anyway, yeah, so, no, I mean, I think that that's, really, like I was saying, just a plausible hypothesis, basically, to explain, the policy of breaking the place. I mean, they talk about having talks. It makes sense that if they want to hold the place together, they would, and I know how politicians are, Dan, I'm not trying to be naive here, but yeah. In this specific situation, it seems like, when Chocolate King comes to power in Kiev, his first order of business obviously should be not a big show of strength and bomb the hell out of people and scare them all across the border. It should be, hey, we're all Ukrainians, we're all brothers, let's sit at the table and work this out. Yeah, we got away with bloody murder overthrowing your president, but now let's try to work something out. And instead, yeah. And there's some talk of that, right? I'll let you elaborate on that, but I'm just trying to agree with you that it seems like the policy is more like let's all scare them the hell across the border, like you're saying. And I don't know if the whole IMF and austerity, it would go along those same lines, but why not? Yeah, go ahead and wreck the place even more.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what's interesting is, and this goes to what you said earlier, that maybe there are some cooler heads out there. I don't know. I mean, I don't have a very high opinion of any politicians, particularly not the EU politicians, most of whom were not elected into their offices. But there was a four-way talks that took place within the last couple of days. As you know, there's been a ceasefire for the past several days, which is kind of a joke because the rebels keep fighting to secede and the Kiev forces keep shelling civilian apartment buildings and killing Russian journalists. So both sides are still shooting. But anyway, there was a four-way talk between the Ukrainian president, Russian president, French and German leaders. And it's pretty interesting if you think about it. These talks are excluding the United States. So I would say probably it gives it probably a better chance of being successful because the U.S. from the very beginning seems to be the party that's been ginning this whole thing up. And I think the Europeans, as as ridiculous as they are, and as lapdogish as they are toward the U.S., they do recognize, particularly Germany's business sector, they recognize they've got a lot to lose here if things go south. So perhaps if they can keep the U.S.'s nose out of it, they might find some sort of a way to extend the ceasefire and to look for some sort of political solution to this problem.
Yeah, it seems like the Russians, you know, again, I'm just speculating here, but it seems like the Russians must have told the Kiev junta that, hey, look, you know the Americans are going to focus on backing you up and all of this mess for more than a little while. They're already off chasing kidnapped girls in Nigeria and bogged down again in Iraq and whatever. You don't take them seriously like they're going to support you over the long term. Let's just come to the table and end this thing now before it gets worse. I mean, why wouldn't they say that? And why wouldn't that be the perfect advice? I mean, it seems like, I don't know exactly what they said. That's certainly what I would have said. And that certainly would ring true to anybody in Kiev, too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They'll take the support where they can get it when they can get it. But count on Uncle Sam? Come on.
Do you remember, Scott, it was just a couple of weeks ago when all of the usual voices were screaming that Russia was poised to invade the Baltics. Poised to invade Poland. You had the lunatic, the Secretary General of NATO, Rasmussen, who was going on about Russia is ready to invade and Putin is ready to invade. And now what's interesting is almost the opposite has happened. Putin has almost lost credibility with those who wanted a more aggressive protection of Russian speakers and ethnic Russians across the border by asking to have the authorization for force rescinded, by explicitly disassociating himself with the groups that are fighting. And you see the groups in eastern Ukraine now who really don't have a sponsor, who don't have anyone backing them. And I think you're seeing a lot of frustration. So it's ironic that the opposite of what the usual voices here were claiming has seemed to have taken place.
Yeah, and, you know, as far as him undermining his credibility with the people in the east, you could see how it makes perfect international politics that, you know, you might even, the anti-Putinists might even want to speculate that he deliberately set these Western idiots up to make a bunch of, you know, crazy predictions about what he was going to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just so he could not do it and make them all look like fools, like he's done.
As those of us were saying all along, even though we were accused of all sorts of stupid things, Putin is a politician, you know.
Right.
He's not Hitler. He's not a savior. He's a politician.
And he isn't the one who started this either.
No, it was Victoria Nuland, and it was President Obama, and it was President Bush before him who bankrolled the first Orange Revolution. And now you have the second one that seems to have been successful for now. Probably doesn't have a long shelf life either, actually.
Yeah. Well, and they lost Crimea, which was the only point in the first place, was they wanted it, right? So what's the point of taking Ukraine if you don't get to keep the Crimea?
I know. It's the best beach, isn't it?
Well, I guess the Port of Odessa is something, too. But so now, what about military equipment? The Americans are sending still what kind of aid and in what kind of quantities? Do you know?
Well, they are sending. What's interesting, and I saw someone else, this is not an original thought of mine, but someone else pointed this out. You know, in Iraq, the so-called advisors that are being sent in from Maliki are special forces. So you know what kind of advisors they are. So this person, I think it was Twitter or somewhere, wondered, what about these so-called American advisors in Ukraine? What kinds of people are these? It's probably safe to speculate they're also special forces, and they're also trying to get this pretty wrecked Ukrainian military into shape to fight a guerrilla warfare against the people in the east. And yet when you have a couple of crappy T-64 tanks rolling down the road, the usual suspects here were screaming about a Russian invasion yet again.
Right. Well, and, you know, yeah, it was when Brennan came to town was when they announced their first big anti-terrorism operation in the east there. So I think it was even in the New York Times they kind of noted that, I wonder if these things have anything to do with each other. Speaking of the New York Times, that was the other thing I was going to say was, I thought you'd get a laugh out of this if you hadn't already seen it. was Robert Perry's piece about the New York Times said, oh, well, you know, the reason that Putin has renounced his authority to use force is because he's backing down before the all-powerful might of America and our threat of future sanctions.
Exactly. I mean, you just can't win. You just can't win with these people. You know, they just keep pushing it and keep pushing it.
They went from Hitler to Chamberlain in 1 minute.
Exactly.
He's appeasing us now.
Yeah. Well, look at the same people who were talking about Iraq for so long.
Yeah. The very same ones. In fact, yeah, for people who aren't familiar with the gossip, it's fun. Newland is the wife of Robert Kagan, the co-author of Toward a Neo-Reaganite Foreign Policy, Bill Kristol's alter ego, the architect of destruction.
Yes, and her brother-in-law is the architect of the surge.
Yep. All right, we're all out of time. Thank you so much. Dan McAdams, everybody's at the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity.
Thanks, Scott.
Hey, all, Scott here for Liberty.me, the brand new social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features nightly classes, guides, events, publishing, and so much more. Sign up now and you get the first 30 days free. And if you click through the link in the right margin at scotthorton.org or use the promo code Scott when you sign up, you'll save $5 per month for life. That's more than a third off the regular price. And hey, once you sign up, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. Hey, y'all, Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first and just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way, the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world, except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you.
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods's Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support the Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.